All right, my first guest really needs no introduction, but with the Orioles coming into town, my friend and the broadcaster for the Orioles, Hall of Famer, 19-year career, 268 wins. I could go on and on, 3 Cy Youngs, you know, all the All-Stars, 6 All-Star teams, 4 Gold Gloves. I don't know, Hall of Famer Jim Palmer joins the show. Jim, how are we doing?
We're doing quite well. Off day here in San Francisco. The weather's nice. So I'm just kind of, I'm a little apprehensive because Logan Webb is pitching for the Giants tomorrow. Other than that, I'm having a pretty good day.
Well, what do you think of Logan Webb if you've watched him pitch before? I mean, it would be nice to hear a Hall of Famer's opinion.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, what's not to like? How good was he in the postseason last year? You know, he throws strikes. He's got a great changeup. Ground ball pitcher when he needs to be. Yeah, you know, I mean, pitches in a big ballpark. I mean, you name it. I don't see a lot of negatives here. And, you know, very competitive. What more can you ask for?
Yeah, he's got a football player's mentality on the mound, and he's way older than his years. I mean, super mature out there. When things get rough, he gets better. So let's talk about yourself for a while. I mean, you averaged 17 wins a year for your 19-year career, and all the numbers I looked at today before we came on, to me, that's the one that stuck out. You averaged 17 wins a year. You've been a broadcaster for 44 years now. I mean, you've doubled your career as a broadcaster with 19 years in the big league. So, I mean, let's talk about the new rules, the pitch clock, your career. I mean, right now, how would you fare with the pitch clock? I feel like you didn't need one. You worked really fast.
Well, we used to have a T-shirt, Ray Miller. Well, George Bamberger was our pitching coach when I got back to the big leagues after I had torn my rotator cuff. Well, you know, it's about 23, and he had a T-shirt that said basically, "Work." You know, Ray Miller's was for, you know, work fast, throw strikes, change speeds. So we actually had a pitch clock, but it was more of just something they put up in Memorial Stadium, the old Memorial Stadium in Baltimore. And I had a lot of guys that were, you know, really, really good pitchers. I mean, I got there in, what, 65. I roomed with Robin Roberts, who had 270 wins. He didn't take any time because he knew what he was doing. He ended up in Cooperstown with 286 wins. And then, you know, I sat in a bullpen with Stu Miller, one of the great changeup pitchers, actually from San Francisco, Harvey Haddocks, you know, Sherm Lawler was the catcher. Charlie Lau went on to be one of the best hitting instructors. So kind of learned about the fact that if you're going to have Brooks Robinson or Aparicio, who's in the Hall of Fame playing shortstop, or Belanger or Blair with 8 Gold Gloves, you want them pitch quickly. You want them on their toes, not on their heels. So, and the other thing was, when I eventually played for Earl Weaver, he didn't think I threw enough first pitch strikes. So he said, "I'll tell you what, I'll give you $4 for every first pitch strike you throw. You owe me $2 when you don't." After 2 games, he owed me $124. So he got his point across. And everybody talks, you know, I mean, you know as well as when you look at the stats. I mean, it's one thing to, you know, talk about how the batting averages go down when you throw strike one. The other thing is, can you do it? Can you make a quality pitch? I mean, I most people thought I had 4 pitches, but I was probably going to throw a lot of fastballs. And as long as I kept it out of the middle of the plate, I usually had success.
Talking to Hall of Famer Jim Palmer, nice enough to join the show today, getting you ready for the O's and the Giants this weekend. Big weekend series. Who's the greatest player you ever faced? Was it Mickey, Hank, Willie? Who's the best one you ever went up against?
Well, I faced Mickey. He was 1-for-11. I had a 2-0 lead. I struck him out the first 2 times. I went 2-0 on him, and I looked on deck, and there was Roger Maris. And even at age 20, I was smart enough to know you don't walk Mickey Mantle to get to Roger Maris. Because this is like 5 years after he had, or 4 years actually, after he had, you know, broken Babe Ruth's record. And Mantle hit the spotter's box in Yankee Stadium and on the second with a missile. It was almost as impressive as Robert Redford's home run in the Natural, except it was a day game, so the lights didn't go off. But, you know, I think, you know, Carew, Brett, I mean, you could name all the great hitters. But I think the guy that I would have had the most trouble with day in and day out would have been Roberto Clemente. We played him in 71. We lost 2-1 in game 7. He was an MVP with 13 hits. He could do everything. And he could also hit every pitch you throw.
Talking Hall of Famer Jim Palmer, nice enough to join the show. So, I mean, when you talk about your best season, you were second in the MVP in 1973, 22-9. Then you were 21-10 in 72, 23-11 in 75. I mean, you were second in the Cy Young a couple of times. If you look back now at your career, which one would you pick out as your very best season?
Well, I won 20 games. I played on really good teams. You got to understand that. I played with some of the greatest players that ever played. Frank Robinson, we traded for him in my second year in 66. He won the Triple Crown. Hit two more in the World Series when we beat the Dodgers four in a row. Played with Brooks Robinson, played with Boog Powell, who, was MVP in 70, and he was second in 69 at 350 home runs. I played with Cal Ripken. I think I was pitching the night he started the streak. I played with Eddie Murray. I played with 420 game winners in 71, three in 70. We had really good ball clubs, and it was just fun to play for the Orioles because Earl Weaver, was primarily my manager. He didn't have a meeting that, would say that we're going to take the best 25 guys. And if we play as one, we're usually going to end up in the postseason. And that's kind of where we ended.
What was Earl Weaver like behind the scenes? Because we see all the videos of him now just kind of getting into it with umpires and almost fighting guys on the field. And I missed that from today's game. I think it's been sterilized
bit. You got to understand that the era was, Billy Martin, Ralph Houk, they almost love to get thrown out. I know Bobby Cox is a terrific guy, got thrown out the most times, but Earl liked to win. And he also, he didn't wear his glasses, so he didn't really know what was going on. So if things weren't going as well, I'm not sure he really saw them clearly. And he never played higher in double A ball. He did drive in 104 runs in double A, but he became a big league manager. He loved when we threw sliders because it was a pitch he couldn't hit. And if we didn't, he would get pretty upset. The one thing, Effie, is that, I'd have won a lot of games for him, but he never shook my hand.
Really?
And, I said, why don't you do that, Earl? He said, well, what am I going to do when you lose? So I said, well, you're going to pat me on the rear end and tell me to do better the next time. But we had a lot of great teams. And if you look at almost the 20 years I played with the Orioles, we had the best winning percentage in baseball and had a lot of continuity. When guys got old, Bobby Gritch came up and Don Baylor, and then it was Eddie Murray. And, we just had Cal came up, in 82, but maybe 4 or 5 years after Eddie ends up in the Hall of Fame playing all those 2,632 consecutive games. I had a chance if I didn't win on Monday, Flanagan or McGregor or McNally or Cuellar. Mike Cuellar, we made a great trade with Houston. He won 139 games in 7 years. And so we just had a lot of good ball clubs and we were pitching wasn't the same as it is now because basically we pitched complete games. The year we had the 420 game winners, we had 72 complete games. So, and that's like after I hurt my shoulder or really hurt my elbow in 74, the one year I didn't win 20 games, 75 was probably the game that I think the year that I enjoyed the most. I came back, I was 7-12, lost 1-0 in the playoffs in 74, pitched 25 complete games, 10 shutouts, 2.09 ERA, and, had to beat Captish Hunter out, who was one of the great pitchers of all time, to win the Cy Young. So, and did it on the last day of the season up in New York. Bonds Bobby Bonds and Thurman Munson took the day off. I was the happiest pitcher in the world.
So what do you think about today's starting pitcher with the 5 and dive or maybe 6 innings, 7 if you're lucky? You had all the complete games. The way the game has changed right now, does that frustrate you to see pitchers go out there and throw 100 pitches and shut it down or maybe even less?
Well, I think it does. But, I'd listen to you broadcast. I think, you do your homework. You're pretty analytical. I like to think I'm the same way. My question would be, I know they pitch every fifth day versus every fourth day when we pitch. They only throw, 95, 100 pitches, maybe 105, but maybe some pitchers will throw a few more. So they get more rest. They're better conditioned because they can work out all year long. They have massage therapists. They have chiropractors. They have 4 or 5 trainers. They have lasers, and they pitch less. Now, if that's the way it's going to be, fine. But if you look at the numbers, what they look at is first time through the order, second time through the order, third time through the order. Now, only with the good pitchers. So, perfect example is Logan Webb, who's going to pitch tomorrow night. 200 the first time, 242, which is pretty good, 273. So the numbers don't really get that high. But for a lot of pitchers, they do. So what do? They go to the bullpen because they're going to bring in a guy that matches up a little bit better and whatever. So you never get to pitch as much as maybe you could. You never really get to learn about yourself. There's nothing like in my ear going to Fenway Park with a 2-1 lead or 3-2 lead and have to get Fisk, Rice, and Yaz out in the ninth inning with a one-run lead. And the reason I say that is because you get to learn about yourself. You know, how smart are you? How much, you know, are you in shape? Or can you get a guy out more than once? And the amazing thing to me is in our era, I mean, guy would come up, you know, you would be facing me left-handed. I'd throw you a fastball away. If you took it, I'd probably throw you another one. If you fouled it off, I'd probably throw you another one. If you hit it to left field, I get an information pitch. And then I realize, well, maybe I could get you out with a changeup or curveball. Most hitters now get every pitch that you have the first time through the order. So you never really have anything to really go back to when you get in trouble. So the game's changed. Apparently it's okay only to throw 100 pitches. But I know physically these guys could do a lot more because aren't they supposed to be bigger and stronger than you know the other generations? So it doesn't frustrate me. I just kind of wonder why a guy can't get a guy out more than two times.
You had 20 complete games, 20 plus complete games, four times in your career, and you guys did it on whiskey and cigarettes. And now they have, now they have masseuses and trainers. I know you did. That's why you look so good at your age. You're talking to Jim Palmer, Hall of Famer, nice enough to join us tonight. All right, 19-year career with the Orioles. You played on some great teams. All of a sudden, they've turned it around the last couple of years. What's been the big difference in the O's, their franchise, and why are they playing so well? Last year, they were 83-79. This year, they're 35-21, second in the toughest division in baseball. What's been the big turnaround for the O's?
Well, last year, it was a 10-game winning streak, you know, the beginning of, I think, August. So they went from about 8 or 9 under to getting over 500 and maintained that the rest of the year. Have you been in Baltimore since they added, 26, 28 feet to left field?
I have not, but I heard on the MLB Network the other day, your GM was talking about how that's been one of the biggest differences.
Yeah, you know, I think the reason they did it, obviously, is to help the pitching. I think it's frustrating for some of our right-handed hitters. It's almost impossible. I haven't seen anybody yet left-handed hit the ball to left center. It used to be 364, now it's 398. It's almost like a small national park. It's that big. You know, that's why Austin Hayes, who's a terrific left fielder, he's hitting over 300. That's why he's playing a left field, and and that's why he plays. He can throw, and this year he's hitting really well because he's healthy. So, you know, you need that. It kind of favors still the left-handed hitter or a hitter that can hit the ball the other way. So, you know, last year our bullpen was terrific. Our bullpen was number three yesterday until we had a bullpen game and gave up 12 runs and 17 hits. So I'm sure that number went up a little bit. But basically, you know, we have some young players, but we also have guys that nobody's ever really heard of, you know, in a sense, you know, we have they've heard about Allie Rutschman because he was our number one draft choice. And, you know, he got, I think, $8.1 million. And when I played, if I looked at my third baseman, it was Brooks Robinson. He's usually better than the guys we were playing. And then we went to right field and it was Frank Robinson. You know, he was on his way to the Hall of Fame better, you know, with 86 home runs. And, you know, then was Boog Powell who won the MVP and did 350 home runs, or it was Blair in center with eight gold gloves, or Don Buford, who was the best leadoff guy. The Orioles are kind of getting back to that. You know, Rutschman's as good as any catcher in baseball. And yet he's only in his second year. He walks. He throws guys out. He calls a great game. You know, as a switch hitter, on base percentage, you know, is almost 400. And the only thing he doesn't do well is actually hit with runners in scoring position. And I know that's going to change because, you know, you can't hit 214 when you're that good a hitter. So just a lot of good players. I think we're going to miss, if you're going to go to the Giant game this weekend, you're going to miss Cedric Mullins, who pulled an abductor. And he was having an all-star year. You know, 2 years ago, he was our first 30-30 guy for the Orioles. He can steal bases. He can go get them in center field. You know, he can hit home runs. He can do a lot of things. So he'll be gone for a while. They haven't put a specific time on it. But I think basically they're going to miss him. You know, we Rule 5 guy, Anthony Santander, hit more home runs than any switch hitter in baseball. He plays right field for us. Mountcastle hit 33 home runs, the most of any rookie a couple of years ago. He's having a good year. He's got 11 home runs this year. So they have a lot of guys that, you know, maybe you haven't heard of because We play the Yankees. We play the Red Sox. We play Toronto. And we have a $60 million payroll. Try competing in the American League East with a $60 million payroll, but the Orioles have been able to do that.
Talking to Jim Palmer, Hall of Fame pitcher for the Orioles, spent all 19 years of his career with the O's. He will be a Hall of Fame broadcaster soon. 44 years as a broadcaster, too. Nice enough to join the show. Jim, the Giants just called up Patrick Bailey. He's a switch-hitting catcher as well. Really soft hands. He can really frame it. He calls a good game. He just turned 24 years old, and he acts like, in a great way, like he's been here for 10 years. So I guess, you know, I want to ask a Hall of Fame pitcher, you know, Adley Rutschman, not comparing Patrick Bailey to him yet. It's only been a couple of weeks sample size. It's been real good, though. But talk about the importance of a catcher to a guy like yourself or a pitcher and what they mean, the tempo and framing and game calling skills.
Well, you got to be on the same page. I mean, baseball, I don't know if it's really, it's changed because you have more analytical guys. The analytical guy when I came up was John Orsino or Charlie Lau or, you know, Andy Etchebarren, and then it became Rick Dempsey, who caught for 24 years. So, you know, you'd have a game plan. Now you have a guy that sits on the bench that's your, you know, he's in charge of your pitching plan and things like that. But catchers, you know, how you catch the ball. Do you understand that when you call a pitch that the pitcher has to have conviction, you know, to throw that pitch? It's not just some suggestion that you think is the right pitch to get out, but you also have to ascertain whether the guy on the mound can do that. So, you know, and then, you know, the ability, when we see it with Adley Rutschman, and, you know, maybe Bailey does the same type of thing, you know, can he go out there? Can he relate to him? Adley puts his arm around almost every pitcher, regardless if they're the starter or the reliever when they come in, because I think he's trying to connect to him. So to me, it's always been the most important position. Johnny Oates, the late Johnny Oates, I was 10-0 with him and they traded him. And, you know, years later, he's managing the Rangers. He said, "Do you remember that Christmas card?" I said, "Yeah, I sent you a Christmas card because we were 10-0 and they traded you to Atlanta." He says, "Well, I still have it in my drawer." So, you know, it's a mutual respect. I think you really have to understand all your pitchers, and the good catchers can do that.
So how's your health? I saw you had a scare with melanoma around your eye with some freckles. How you doing?
I look like a 77-year-old guy. I have some scars. Looks like maybe I'm an action hero.
Well, you are.
That's not the case. No. Well, I used to be. I'm fine. I found... first of all, you got to, you know, if you've been in the sun as long as I have, and, you know, I never, you know, it's funny, my wife traced my heritage during the playoffs because she didn't want me to be watching baseball, so she was bored. So she, you know, she did the DNA and all that, and I was adopted at birth in New York. So my two parents immigrated from Ireland in the late 20s and met County Clare and County Leitrim, and, you know, they had an affair. I was born in 1945. My uncle went with my adopted mom. He said that my name on the birth certificate was Kennedy. So my uncle always thought I might have been one of those. I actually ran into Eunice Kennedy. I said, "So 1945. She is, ooh, that could be a lot of the Kennedys. So anyway, I wouldn't have gone out in the sun as much if I knew that I was Irish. But I have learned. I mean, I hardly go out anymore because, you know, sun, you love the sun, but, you know, you really have to take care of yourself with the sunscreens and all that. And again, when I started playing, I'm not sure that we had sunscreens in our training room, but that's not the case anymore.
Well, you know, I'll see you at the ballpark tomorrow. Thanks for your time today. I haven't seen you in a while, so I look forward to catching up. But I want to publicly thank you for your help early in my career. We did a bunch of broadcasts together when the O's played the Nationals, and you kind of took me under your wing, and you helped me out early in my broadcasting career, and I always be grateful for that. So, thanks for that. Thanks for coming on today. I look forward to seeing you tomorrow.
Well, my pleasure. But, to be honest, you were never at a loss for words, if I remember this whole thing correctly.
Anyway, I talked for 4 hours. Jim, I talked for 4 hours by myself every night on this show, so you're absolutely right. But
I talk to myself a lot, too, so that, you know, that's why we're broadcasters. Anyway, I'll see you tomorrow. Take care.
All right. Thanks, Jim.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.